You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Another very impressive and fantastic individual joining us in studio, Jay Naidu, you know the name. He joins us today. He's going to be part of the third annual Leaders A Changemakers Conference that's taking place on Saturday, the 25th of August. He's also recently published a book called Change Organizing Tomorrow Today. And if you have some questions for him, we take your calls on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Jay, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's a great pleasure to be back on the show.
Thank you very much for being here. So the book, Organizing Tomorrow Today, you say the world is heading for an explosion. There's going to be some kind of an eruption, and organizing or getting people together is going to become very important. Why do you say there's going to be some kind of an explosion? What would have caused it?
Well, I think if you just look at our country today, we are on the verge of an explosion, a social explosion, largely because of the way in which our leadership has behaved, the allegations and now the evidence of state capture that is taking important resources and diverting it from meeting the needs of our citizens towards meeting the needs of a predatory elite. So if you look at the world, you know, literally we're standing again in a ecological emergency. We are now consuming more resources than 1.5 planets. That means the Earth is not able to replenish the resources we are taking out of it. We have cut down 70% of the forest of the world. Imagine, these are like the lungs, like the Amazon. If we are not able to take carbon, decarbonize our atmosphere, we won't be able to breathe. We will die. If you take land that is in the world today, 30% of the land has been poisoned with chemicals because of monocropping and industrial agriculture. If we cannot grow food, we will die. If you take our water supplies, if you take all of those water supplies, we are now living through a period of climate change, which is fundamentally changing the temperature of our world. Now, we know with every 1 degree rise in temperature, 10% of our agricultural production is lost in the world. So, and the last point is that we're going through what is called the sixth extinction, that literally we've gone through five already, but this one is caused by our human greed. We have already eradicated and made extinct 40% of living species in our world. Now, at 75%, scientists call that an extinction. So we are standing at the point where, because of our addiction to consumption, of buying things we don't need with money we don't have, and which we usually throw away after 6 months, we are threatening the future generations that are coming after us. And we must see that what we are doing is mortgaging the future of our children.
Young people seemingly seem to have a sense of that impending, if we don't do something, it will be a huge problem, it will be a crisis. And so we're seeing lots of mass movements around the world been driven by young people. Young people saying economies can't continue in this manner. The way in which we consume resources also can't continue in the manner that we've been doing, because, as you say, it's going to get us into, you know, more trouble than we can manage. So young people seem to have a sense of that impending, not doom, but the impending crises that we might find ourselves in. And it's often been said that young people have a greater sense of justice than, say, perhaps, or they have a different sense of justice than, say, people thought young people did have. Are we seeing that young people are aware of those concerns, are aware of those problems if we don't address them now?
Absolutely. In fact, the book is a consequence of conversations I've had with young people around the world in informal settlements, in slums, in villages, and they are all saying that. You know, we are in the midst of a technological revolution that has fundamentally changed the way in which we live, we organize, we communicate, and very importantly, the nature of production. We are on the verge of robotics or nanotechnology or artificial intelligence doing much of the manual work that human beings do today. So you're ending up, like in South Africa, with close to half of our young people coming out of 12 years of education facing a future where they will not have formal jobs, where they do not have a future, where they do not have hope. And what we're seeing is young people saying, but this system does not work for us. In fact, what it's led to is increasing accumulation of wealth in the hands of fewer and fewer people, the 1%, whereas the 99% are left behind. So young people are, in fact, the change that will come. And it will be driven by their needs, but also driven by a concern that our greed is threatening the very world that will sustain them. And so if you look at South Africa as an example, you know, if you look at young people in our country, many of them don't even bother to register to vote because they believe our democracy does not work for them. They believe that the democracy has been captured by our economic and political elites. There are 14 million people that go to bed hungry in our country every day. But we claim to be a country that is food secure. So unless we tackle the issues of land, unless we tackle the issues of how do we work with communities so that they can grow their own food and, you know, determine their own futures, we are heading towards a huge explosion in this country.
You say it was a conversation with your daughter that was also quite important with some of the thinking in the book. You say you were looking forward to sharing part of what you say is a full life, that you'd immerse yourself in the struggle for human dignity, but looking towards sharing it with your future grandchildren. You discussed this possibility with your daughter, and you say you weren't expecting the serious, deep answer that she gave to you. And she said, why would you consider bringing a child into a world you believe has destroyed our hope, where money and greed are more important than the human values you've spent fighting your entire life for? And you say this was, it shocked you.
Yes, it did shock me. You know, I just climbed the Kilimanjaro. So, you know, that was on my bucket list. You know, I nearly kicked the bucket wing up the mountain. But I think that this is my letter to the next generation that, you know, the future is in your hands. You can determine your own destiny. I've spent most of my life fighting for social justice and human dignity. We have changed systems. You know, whether it's on the factory floor, whether it's 1994 that created a constitutional democracy. But what I realize now, Googs, you know, many years later, is that it's insufficient to just change the system. The fundamental question we should ask ourselves, how do we change the human being? Because if you look at some of the leaders that are misleading our country today, they come from the same place that I come from. We would have died for each other. We were in the trenches of the struggle for our freedom. Why have some of them become so corrupt? Why have some of them become so arrogant? Why have some of them believed that the struggle was a struggle that they fought not to be poor, that they feed themselves, they enrich themselves and their families? How do we lose that sense of values, the values that constitute the Mandela legacy? And that's because what Mandela said is really important. You know, what is a good leader? A good leader is one with a good head, a pure heart and a forgiving spirit. We are ruling our country from the head. So in that head, that hamster constantly needs to be satisfied. And satisfaction comes from material accumulation. If we go to our heart and if we really understand who we are as human beings, we will find that we are just beings of love, of forgiveness, that we're supposed to care for each other. You know, Ubuntu is that I am because we are. If you are hungry and you are my neighbor, it is my obligation to be to share my food with you. And if we could just go back to those first principles, you know, and they are in our indigenous faiths. If you go deep beyond colonization and apartheid and early days, you'll find that there were communities that lived in Africa that didn't have police forces and courts and institutions because there were no secrets. There was transparency. So there is indigenous wisdom that is fundamentally important for us understanding where we are and where we want to go. And this fits into a whole broader debate around decolonization. I think it's a fundamentally important debate that. Because in the way in which the current system that we work in, the capitalist Western model, they destroyed our indigenous wisdom. And sometimes it's important to go back there and find that there were times long before settlers came here, where men and women were equal, where there wasn't an issue of wealth sitting in the hands of individuals. It was collective ownership. It was communal ownership. And I'm saying these are lessons we can take as we continue our journey around modernization. But most importantly, we saw ourselves as part of nature. We didn't see ourselves as exercising dominion over nature. I need to conquer nature. I need to root out wealth from under the ground. I need to destroy what nourishes me just because I need to satisfy and gratify my present needs.
But actually seeing ourselves as part of nature, which means what happens to nature happens to us.
Exactly.
And we're seeing it now where concerns around pollution in our water, around pollution in our air, around, numbers of bees decreasing, having an impact on the kind of production we can make for what we can eat. Now we're seeing that link. Perhaps we may have ignored it before, that what happens to the earth is eventually going to happen to us as well.
And if you take it one step further, it's like if we see that we are on a living planet, and it is life. We are just part of this planet. We are part of this Mother Earth. But if you look particularly at the role of women, this is Women's Month. I'm coming from a conference of African women leaders convened by Graça Machel and her trust. And what came out of there was in a notion of a second liberation struggle. The first liberation was about political freedom. Who did it free? Like in South Africa, it freed our political elites to enrich themselves, and it freed corporates and multinationals to come in and exploit our wealth. The second liberation has got to be, as she said, not about us women demanding a seat at the table, but reimagining what the table is, what the system is, that respects Mother Earth, that instead of going down and old technologies like nuclear, we have more than 300 days of sunlight in our continent, we could go down renewable. And if we did that, we would create millions of jobs and entrepreneurs. If we had to take the issue of gender parity, if we implemented gender parity in Africa today, the economic output of our continent will increase by $300 billion. What we know is that if women's incomes increases, then 90%, empirical evidence, 90% of that money that they earn goes into health, education, and nutrition of their children, compared to 40% for men. So we know that putting women forward and rising at all levels of our society in every sector,
societies and countries,
it is fabulous for us rebuilding a nurturing spirit of rebalancing our relationship with this wonderful gift, of a priceless gift that has been given to us as Mother Earth.
It's 21 minutes after 11 o'clock, and in our Literature Corner for this week, joined by Jay Naidu, the author of Change Organizing Tomorrow, a former union, a founding secretary general of COSATU, a minister in Nelson Mandela's cabinet, social activist, who's written a book about some of the issues that are pressing now, that we need to deal with if we're going to secure a very different future. And he'll also be part of the Leaders Say Changemakers Conference, which is taking place on the 25th of August. If you have questions for Jay, you can give us a call on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. SMSs on 31702 and 31567.
702 and Cape Talk. The Literature Corner.
23 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back to this week's Literature Corner, looking at a book called Change, Organizing Tomorrow Today, which has been written by Jay Naidu, who joins me in studio this morning. And we take your calls on 021-446-0567, as well as 011-883-0702. You said you wanted to make a point about titles.
Yes, I do. You know, and I think titles are a huge impediment towards building the society that we want. Because everyone is concerned about legacy. You know, the Earth, this Mother Earth that we live in, is close to 5 billion years old. You know, human species that we are, Homo sapiens, is about 200,000 years old. You know, if we're lucky, we live to 70 to 80 years. You know, why are we so addicted to this thing called legacy? So I really like to think that what I want to be known as is a human being, as a husband of a beautiful woman, of the father of three amazing children who teach me something every day. And if we just go back to that, we don't need these titles. If we can just learn to live with kindness and acts of kindness, with love, with forgiveness, Imagine the world that we could be living in. That's what I find. You know, I live now in the Eastern Free State. That's where I want to be because it's amongst farm workers, many who've been evicted from white-owned farms. That's where I spend my time. You know what the biggest crisis the village is dealing with today? They've run out of labor because they now have their own enterprises. They grow their own food. They run a community-run lodge. And it's not a rocket science to do this. If we just go back to the grassroots and if people who are committed to change should understand that change doesn't come by just going and having a weekend workshop. You know, it's not like Twitter and Facebook about how many likes you get. It's hard work. I've been working there with a group of committed individuals with the community for 3 years. We're just scratching the surface. Not 1 cent of government money, but you have a community today that has understood what human dignity means. And if we could get the thousands of young people who are activists today to understand of going back to the village, going back to the community, and one step at a time, we should build the second liberation. The liberation not about political elites and getting power, about service, about being part of our people, of lifting all our people, the 55 million South Africans. And that's the type of politics. It's not the political consciousness. It's about human consciousness. And if we bring the humanity back in our lives, into our politics, into our economy, then we build the South Africa of our dreams. Otherwise, we are just replicating the replacement of one predatory elite with another predatory elite.
Human connection is actually quite important when you discuss how you then are able to organize people. And in fact, there's been many questions about why certain movements are unable to get large numbers of people or to get people to get involved. And organizing has a lot to do with connections. So when you speak to the students who are involved with Fees Must Fall, they say by the time they were marching, they'd been doing months of work, of conversations, of engagements, of one-on-one or group engagements, because that was actually the groundwork for the protest, and that's why they were able to get the numbers that they could. And you say that it's important rallying people, but to do so, you need to connect with them.
Absolutely.
It's more than just handing out pamphlets, which is also a lesson you say you learned early on.
Well, it's a lesson that I came out of the 1976 generation. We came out of the Black Consciousness Movement led by Steve Biko and people like Mampela Rampela. You know, and what it taught us there is that, you know, the mind of the oppressed is the main weapon in the hands of the oppressor. This is what happened even today, is that suddenly, the future belongs to those that are in political power. The future belongs to the people. And one of the first lessons you learn as an activist that I learned in 1979 was to learn to shut my mouth and listen to the people. They know more about their problems than I know. They know more about the solutions than I know. My job is not to treat people as victims. It's to treat them as equals. I learn as much from them as they learn from me. We co-create the future. And that process is a very difficult process for the current generation because they are so connected. They are more connected than any other generation in a lifetime. They can get information at their fingertips, you know? And so they expect that when you're working with real people, it's hard work.
Because it's painstaking very different work. To tweeting.
Yes, it's very different to, you know, what Twitter and Facebook are, you know, because these are, you know, there's no country run by Twitter or Facebook. It's run by real people. And ultimately, if you want to build power, to hold those in power at the top accountable, the only power they understand is the power of organized people. And there's tremendous discontent in our country. There's tremendous anger in our country, as much as we had in the 1980s. But we have to have the type of sacred activism that connects and allows that anger to be channeled to a positive end. Otherwise, what it gets manipulated and orchestrated is towards an electoral victory for another predatory elite of a different kind, but whose practices are exactly the same as that those who they are replacing. So if we want real change in our country, it's got to be back to our people, to the basics, and then co-creating that second liberation struggle, which takes those that have been left behind, which is the vast majority of South Africans, the marginalized, the women, the youth, the LGBT community, the villagers, take those people and say, what is the future we reimagine for the majority of people? And that's not going to be done through political parties because many of them have been captured. Or if they're not captured, once they're in power, they will be captured.
Mm.
So I'm just saying is that ultimately the only power we have to hold leaders accountable is the power of organized communities who understand what they want, understand how they can organize themselves and demand that of their leaders. And ultimately, that's the democracy we want to create, to leave for the next generation.
Mm. The book is called Change, Organizing Tomorrow Today by Jay Naidu. And it is a fantastic book that touches on many issues, many of them that we discuss on this platform and in pressing issues, and how there is, if we get it right, if we get the human connection, the organizing correctly, that we can deal with some of our challenges. It also draws from experiences from other parts of the world, Nigeria, Brazil, Bangladesh. And I think it's a definite must read. So if you haven't gotten it yet, I strongly recommend you get it. Jay Naidu will also be part of the LeadSA Changemakers Conference. And if you want to be a part of it, you can visit leadsa.co.za. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks so much, Gugs. And all the proceeds of that book are going to Naledi Village. It's the village that I'm working with in the Eastern Free State.